after.
Hello, I'm Lynn Ahmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will look at vaccine deployment in Africa. Countries on the African continent have joined others in rolling out COVID-19 vaccines. Vaccine rollout against the virus has been ongoing around the world. However, observers say most doses have gone to high-income countries. But an initiative by the World Health Organization, COVAX, aims to provide equitable global access to the vaccines. Ghana received the first shipment of vaccine, COVAX, followed by Côte d'Ivoire and Nigeria, with doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine made by the Serum Institute of India. Ghana, Côte d'Ivoire, and Nigeria are among 92 low- and middle-income countries that are receiving vaccines for free through COVAX. Ghana and Côte d'Ivoire have started to vaccinate the population against COVID-19. Let's go to Abidjan in the Ivory Coast to look at the vaccination drive with COVAX doses. Côte d'Ivoire on Monday began inoculating frontline healthcare staff and police with COVID-19 vaccines. The country received 504,000 doses of the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine on Friday, delivered through the COVAX sharing facility. Dr. Athanase Yaoundé was one of the first to receive a shot.
I'm relieved for having just received the vaccine, since it is the price to pay to push forward and reduce the illness.
Côte d'Ivoire plans to roll the vaccines out to medical workers, security force members, and teachers before vaccinating people over 50, those with chronic diseases, and travelers. The West African country, along with its neighbor Ghana on Monday, became the first countries in the world to administer vaccines from COVAX.
We hope there will be more and it will speed up. We invite the population to come and get vaccinated, because to get vaccinated is a way of breaking the transmission chain.
COVAX is an initiative led by the Gavi Vaccines Alliance, along with the World Health Organization and other partners, to provide equitable global access to the COVID-19 vaccines. The initiative aims to deliver nearly 2 billion doses to over 90 low- and middle-income countries free of charge, covering up to 20% of their populations. In Côte d'Ivoire's capital, Abidjan, more than 100 people waited patiently in line at a sports complex in the Trècheville neighborhood early on Monday to receive the first shots of the vaccines.
Seeing the vaccine arrive is comforting. It is a relief. It will impact on social development because everything has slowed down. Nothing works at the moment. So if today everyone gets vaccinated, we won't be scared anymore. And when the illness is neutralized, things will take off again as before.
Africa has reported relatively fewer COVID-19 deaths, just over 102,000, compared to other continents. But the toll is rising as a second wave of infections overwhelms the hospitals. Ivory Coast has had approximately 32,000 cases and about 192 deaths. As African countries kick off vaccination campaigns amid mistrust over COVID-19 vaccine efficacy and safety, health ministers are among the first to take the shots. VOA's Mariama Diallo reports on Senegal and Zimbabwe, two countries that began inoculating their populations using Sinopharm, the Chinese-made COVID-19 vaccine.
Senegal received 200,000 doses of the Chinese-made COVID-19 vaccine last week and started vaccinating on Tuesday. Health Minister Abdoulaye Diouf Sarr was the first in line to mark what he called a historic day.
Senegal is one of seven countries among the 54 countries of the African continent to start the vaccination against COVID-19.
Priorities include healthcare workers, people over 60, and those with underlying health conditions. Sarr says in addition to the Chinese vaccine, the country is also looking at other possibilities to increase their stock.
The head of state is now finalizing talks with Russia to enable us to soon receive the Sputnik V. During the month of March, Senegal will also receive its first batch of the COVAX initiative.
Senegal is due to receive nearly 1.3 million vaccine doses through the World Health Organization-led COVAX initiative, which deployed a batch of 600,000 in Ghana this week as part of a first wave of coronavirus vaccines being sent to a number of low- and middle-income countries. In Zimbabwe, Vice President Constantino Chiwenga, also the country's health minister, volunteered for the first Chinese-made vaccine as well. Amid reports of public mistrust over vaccine safety, Chiwenga said his ministry had done its homework.
My ministry conducted all scientific processes to ascertain the efficacy of Sinopharm vaccine, which was confirmed to be 79%.
Zimbabwe received 200,000 doses from the Sinopharm vaccine as a donation from the Chinese government. Another 600,000 doses purchased by Zimbabwe are expected to arrive early next week, according to government officials. Vaccine recipient Michael Chideme says he's relieved to have taken the shot, but
taking the jab does not mean I will not be able to, I will not get the disease if I don't practice caution. But I'll be extra cautious, but I'm happy I've taken the jab.
Zimbabwe, like many other African countries, initially recorded low coronavirus numbers in the first months of the pandemic, but subsequently saw cases go up. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
In South Africa, citizens, civil society organizations and political parties have welcomed the government's decision to ease restrictions designed to limit the spread of COVID-19. This comes as infection and death rates decline in the African country most affected by the pandemic. But many are concerned at the slow pace of vaccinations. Darren Taylor has more.
Gatherings of no more than 100 people indoors and 250 people outdoors are now allowed, as are alcohol sales. So South Africans will be socializing much more freely, except during the curfew from midnight to 4 a.m. Political organizations such as chief opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, have welcomed the lifting of most bans. But leader John Steenhuisen says the government should have done this a long time ago to prevent widespread business bankruptcies and job losses.
The big focus now has to be on the vaccination program and on making sure that we get far more concrete numbers and timeframes on that. You know, we'll certainly be looking to ensure that government is able to roll out the vaccination program as quickly as possible and as widely around the country as possible to prevent another scenario of lockdown, which will be just too devastating for too many businesses.
Steenhuisen's concerned that with most of the vaccines that South Africa has procured so far only arriving in the second half of the year, more waves of COVID-19 are inevitable.
Hopefully government will be able to access far more of them and far more quickly. We've got to vaccinate at a much higher level than we're doing at the moment. Many, many other countries are getting through far quicker the program, and we've got a lot of catching up to do.
Many South Africans feel the same, including Economic Freedom Fighters representative Sinawo Tambo.
A president cannot come out boldly and proudly to announce that 67,000 people out of 58 million in the country have been vaccinated thus far and try and posture that as a vaccination campaign. An inadequate and clumsy vaccination campaign that has been characterized by corruption, that has been characterized by failure, and characterized by incompetence.
There's been no evidence of corruption linked to the country's vaccination plan, although many critics have branded the state's attempts to secure jabs as woeful. Freedom Front Plus leader Peter Groenewald says President Cyril Ramaphosa should bear responsibility for this.
In the beginning of this year, he said that by the end of the year, they plan to inoculate 40 million people in South Africa. I then said that it is not going to materialize, and I can't understand why the government does not allow people and institutions and companies to, on their own and private way, obtain certain vaccines and to vaccinate their people.
He points to the country's wealthy mining companies.
They are willing to buy the vaccines and vaccinate their workers and their families. And I can't understand why the government does not want to allow that.
South Africa's health department says unstructured and separate vaccine programs would be dangerous and confusing. But what's really creating confusion, says the Inkatha Freedom Party's Mkuleko Hlengwa, is the government's failure to share its vaccination plans in simple terms with citizens.
It seems to be a very high-level kind of communication which does not respond to the very real challenges on the ground. I mean, if you borrow the example of the UK where you had black church leaders helping government to engage with constituents because of government inability to communicate effectively, the same applies here in South Africa as well. I mean, you're looking at a country where...
Local scientists say the scaling down of lockdown restrictions will undoubtedly cause a rise in infections in the coming weeks and months, fueling the intensity of an expected third wave of coronavirus. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Now to Botswana, where the government has eased COVID restrictions despite rising death toll. Reporter Mkondisi Dube tells us more.
In a televised address, President Masisi said rising COVID-19 cases mean the curfew will continue until the end of March. Botswana introduced a 9-hour curfew in December, but Masisi announced Friday the hours have been reduced to 6.
The curfew period restricting the movement of people will be extended from the 1st to the 31st of March 2021 and will begin at 2200 hours, 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. daily. Government has decided to lift the suspension of the sale of alcohol with effect from 1st March 2021. Alcohol will only be sold to consumers on weekdays only.
Masisi says in lifting the alcohol ban, the government took into consideration the impact on the economy.
Studies, both scientific and anecdotal, have shown that alcohol consumption impairs judgment, making it difficult for some cases to adhere to the set health protocols. Although necessary at the time, government is nonetheless worried by the effects of the temporary ban on the sale of alcohol on the industry and by extension on the country's economy.
The local industry employs more than 50,000 people. The Botswana Alcohol Industry Association President Masegonyana Madisa welcomes the decision to lift the ban.
As the alcohol industry, we've always maintained a certain position. That is, government should find a more sustainable approach to this problem that we have, which involves curbing the spread of the virus which we have in Botswana, and at the same time, balancing it with protecting the lives and livelihoods of those in the alcohol industry, including its extensive value chain.
Meanwhile, the country's COVID-19 Task Force Team Vice Chairperson, Musipili Musipili, is concerned with the rising death toll.
The unfortunate report that we would like to share is the sharp increase in number of COVID-19 fatalities. The last time we reported, we stood at 254, and unfortunately today we report cumulative 300 total number of COVID-19 associated fatalities for Botswana.
The Southern African countries recorded 28,371 COVID-19 cases and 310 deaths. President Masisi has asked the nation to adhere to COVID-19 protocols as the country awaits the arrival of the first batch of vaccine in March. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone.
It is time for a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. International aid group Doctors Without Borders has expressed concern over what it calls late COVID-19 vaccine deliveries to poorer nations under Global Procurement Initiative, COVAX. The group is calling for postponing deliveries to wealthy countries so enable at-risk people living in developing countries can get a shot. International Edition's Chinedu Ofor spoke with Katie Elder, Senior Vaccines Policy Advisor for MSF's Access Campaign.
WHO has set very clear guidance as the lead global health agency that we should be vaccinating the highest at-risk people in every country before we are extending vaccination to low-risk populations. So I understand that folks might think it's unfair if governments have contributed so much public funding to the research and development and the manufacturing. If we are looking at opening economies again, if we're looking at truly saving the most lives, if we're looking at ending this pandemic, we have to use those vaccines, that scarce supply, in the smartest way possible. Despite that framework, we have a severe inequity between wealthy governments that have gobbled up the vast majority of these vaccine supplies, and the about 130 countries that haven't yet been able to administer a single dose of COVID-19 vaccines. Many of those countries relying heavily on the global procurement mechanism called the COVAX facility.
Don't you think you're fighting against the optics and even the politics of it? How would a population or a country react if they knew that their country is sending COVID vaccines to other countries when they have not gotten a shot?
Well, I mean, I think we live in such a globalized world. I think people understand that now, especially in light of this pandemic and how rapidly it's spread. We are not isolated countries. Our borders are not closed. We have to think commonly. I know it's very much right now, over the past few years, seemingly governments have become more insular. Seemingly some people have become, as livelihoods are under threat, as people face many challenges, sometimes it's hard to really think globally. But I think for the most part, people understand. They understand that we're part of a global ecosystem, and really that this pandemic itself illustrated that so clearly. So I know everybody wants their vaccine, for sure. Everybody should have access to their vaccine. We need to look at some of the systemic roots of the biomedical innovation system that landed us in this horrible situation where we have too few vaccines for the world, right? And there is a lot to unpack there. The reason why we are in this situation is because we've been conducting vaccine development, and who gets access to these vaccines really is business as usual, despite the tens of billions of dollars of public funding that's been put into it.
Do you think this is a failure of the COVAX system?
The COVAX system right now, it is the globally agreed upon procurement mechanism. We do think there are many limitations to that system. We made recommendations back at the beginning of the summer and the spring of last year when the COVAX facility was being constructed. We made, as MSF, recommendations in terms of the architecture and the policies that the COVAX facility should have adopted if we were going to progress more and be more ambitious and deliver more for governments. Many of those recommendations weren't taken. Nevertheless, we're at the place where that is the global procurement mechanism. So we really have to make sure that it's successful.
What would you suggest to make the system more successful and also better?
First and foremost, we need to go back to the roots of this system that have landed us in this place. We need to completely reevaluate biomedical innovation and how drugs, vaccines, and diagnostic tools are developed and how they're shared equitably across the world. It is not right now a system that favors public health. It is a system that favors commercialization and commerce and big business.
That was VOA's Chinedu Ofor speaking with Kate Elder, Senior Vaccines Policy Advisor for MSF's Access Campaign. Now, millions of COVID-19 vaccines are to be rolled out this year as Africa tries to end the pandemic. But Interpol is warning of an onslaught of criminal activity linked to vaccines. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Interpol crime intelligence analyst John Patrick Broom says, as is the case in the rest of the continent, criminal gangs in East Africa import fake medicines from Asia, mostly China and India.
They consist of a lack of active ingredients as well as other harmful substances in some cases. Illicit medications are primarily entering the market in Eastern Africa through the avoidance of regulations. There's violence-based criminality and there is corruption as well, and corruption which is at a number of different levels.
China and India are expected to produce much of Africa's vaccine supply. That's already a big red flag, says Nigerian journalist Ruona Meyer, whose work has exposed state officials and pharmaceutical company executives working with criminals to distribute falsified medicines in West Africa. Meyer says there won't be enough vaccines, and as infection rates and deaths spike in some countries, criminals will introduce fakes into supply chains. She points out they did this quite easily with chloroquine, when demand for the anti-malarial drug skyrocketed last year after it was touted as a cure for coronavirus.
So you have people who started producing fake. You have people who started breaking down these routes. There were cases where all these type of things were hijacked at ports. Again, they want to break the supply chain and cash in from there.
Authorities throughout West and Central Africa seized large quantities of falsified and substandard chloroquine. Police in Cameroon shut down several pharmaceutical manufacturers who were producing fake chloroquine.
The infrastructure alone is mind-boggling to be able to do all these things. Nobody does all this if there is no demand.
Lawyers Marius Schneider and Nora Ho-Tu-Nam represent some of the world's biggest pharmaceutical companies when their products are falsified in Africa. Ho-Tu-Nam says criminal organizations have been waiting eagerly for mass immunization programs to start and for vaccine shortages.
Now people are aware that the vaccine exists. People know that it's being rolled out in certain countries. And I think that's a perfect time for those syndicates to come in and say, we have a vaccine. You're not getting it in the hospital. You're not getting it in your private clinics. So come to us.
Schneider says groups who deal in illicit black market vaccines always do their best to give their activities a veil of legitimacy.
We have seen instances where NGOs, which have very similar names to pharmaceutical companies, I cannot give you any names there, but have been engaged in the distribution of these vaccines. These NGOs had as a mission to distribute these on the ground in African countries that were implicated in a vaccine traffic. So, you know.
Mark Mikalev of the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime says North Africa could be a major entry point for falsified and substandard vaccines. He says uncontrolled trafficking of fake medicines, such as tramadol, a pain reliever, has been happening across the vast region for decades.
Counterfeit vaccines and fake vaccines, basically. I think there's a big danger of that, both in the Maghreb itself, unregulated territories in Libya, definitely, but also in Tunisia and maybe border areas of Egypt, less so in Algeria, perhaps, but especially in the northern Sahel.
McAuliffe says criminals dealing in falsified medicines exploit gaps in health services, and this will be especially true of COVID-19 shots, which is going to make the crime very difficult to control in North Africa.
This form of trafficking, it is tapping an actual health sector need, and the fear is that in the case of the vaccines, a similar scenario might unfold, where there are shortages, especially in border areas, that are preyed upon by criminal enterprise trying to fill that gap.
Crime analysts say Africa's porous borders and bribable officials make it very easy for organized crime groups to move fake and substandard vaccines to wherever demand and profits are highest. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
After an erratic start, the largest vaccination effort on the African continent has finally begun in South Africa. VOA's Anita Powell walks us down the long, winding road that is bringing hope to millions.
South Africa only started rolling out the coronavirus vaccine in the last 2 weeks. But President Cyril Ramaphosa says they've hit the ground running, with more than 67,000 health workers inoculated in the first 10 days as part of the first stage.
The start of our vaccination campaign has so far gone extremely well. It has shown that we can achieve much when we work together as a government, a scientific community, private sector, and community-based organizations. All provinces have established vaccination sites and have put in place plans for the expansion of the program as it will be gaining momentum.
The second phase will start as soon as late April and will include the elderly, essential workers, those who work or live in institutions, and those with other health risks. In all, South Africa hopes to vaccinate 40 million of its nearly 59 million people. Ramaphosa spoke to the nation late Sunday, also announcing that South Africa would drop its viral restrictions to the lowest possible level, level 1. The eased regulations still require masks to be worn in public and place limits on alcohol sales and crowd sizes, but represent the most lenient restrictions the country has seen in a year. In all, the nation has seen more than 1.5 million confirmed cases, the highest burden on the continent, and about 50,000 deaths. Dr. Richard Lessels, one of South Africa's top viral researchers, says that he thinks authorities made the right move in stopping use of the AstraZeneca vaccine because it was not found to be entirely effective against the highly contagious variant that has driven most of South Africa's new infections. The nation is switching to a mix of different vaccines, which have shown greater efficacy against the variant, including the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and the Pfizer vaccine. And he says South African regulators are looking at other vaccines, including those made in Russia and China. Lessel says South Africa's relatively late start in vaccination wouldn't have impacted the nation's deadly second wave.
clearly there was a lot of concern about us being late to the party and late getting started. The reality, however, is that whether we'd got started earlier or not, the vaccination wouldn't have impacted on that second wave that we saw, that really dreadful second wave, because that was already in motion in December. What's critical now is to get vaccine into as many people as possible before any resurgence and any possible third wave.
He also said researchers are working to develop a vaccine against the highly contagious new variant. In Johannesburg, the nation's economic hub, residents this week had mixed feelings about the vaccination campaign. Some said they would be eager to get it as soon as possible, and others expressed concern about the one-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine, just approved for use in the U.S. The Rainbow Nation has a long road ahead, but, says Ramaphosa, this is a country that has known hardship.
So much has changed in our country and in our lives, but the spirit of our people has not changed. You have endured the greatest hardships, but you have remained resolute, united, and hopeful. Now, a year after the virus first reached our shores, we have a much clearer path towards containing infections and ultimately overcoming the disease.
Shot by shot, he says, they'll get it done. Anita Pal, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Having a doctor or healthcare worker make a house call is associated with the wealthy in many places. But that is changing in Zimbabwe. Public hospitals are filled to capacity. Reporter's Vina Chave has more.
Cuthbert Nxumalo is a young Zimbabwean who survived COVID-19. He details his ordeal.
I tested positive for COVID-19 in September. Last year, so when I tried to go to a nearby hospital, they told me that they could not admit me because my temperature was too high. I tried to two private hospitals, and they told me that they couldn't admit me again because my temperature was high. I got a private doctor who was treating me at home.
He says the situation opened his eyes to the poor state of Zimbabwe's health sector. He was particularly hesitant to visit public hospitals because he was certain he would not get much care. Morale is low there, with nurses spending the bulk of 2020 on strike, demanding raises and protective personnel equipment. Donald Mujiri, a Minister of Health official, defended the government's capacity to provide care similar to private hospitals.
Inviting your own family doctor to your home or wherever would say it's your own choice, but not that we are not giving services to public hospitals, no. And I remember in public hospitals, it's free. All COVID-19 patients treated free of charge. I don't think government can monitor that. But what we can monitor is what comes to our institution by way of admission and the treatment.
Nxumalo says his road to recovery offset him just under $200 American, civil servants, and just below $200. And part of it is in local currency. Home care for COVID-19 patients has provided additional revenue for healthcare workers, the majority of whom are underpaid in the public sector. Many say they can't afford to go to work without large raises to cope with rising costs of everything from food to fuel. Itai Rusike, executive director of the Community Working Group on Health, says the private sector is the reason why public hospitals are overwhelmed.
The exorbitant pricing and the profiteering practices of the private doctors for COVID-19 treatment and care is not acceptable, as the majority of poor Zimbabweans cannot afford the astronomical fees being charged. It has resulted in the public health institutions being overwhelmed by sick people and operating at full capacity.
He says only 10% of Zimbabwe's population have medical insurance, and the bulk of the programs can't cover COVID-19 treatment and care in private institutions. Rusike says there is need to revisit the idea of a national health insurance that covers everyone. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. I'm your host, Lina Ahmadou in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more frequently.